from the moment of conception and then, the developing baby in the mother's womb is dependent on that environment to sustain life. And then we're born and we rely on caregivers. Apparently, the human baby is one of the most vulnerable mammals. You see little horses and dogs and cats, and they just get up and start walking quite quickly after they're born. But we're so dependent. And so we're born into this kind of web of interdependence. And on it goes throughout the course of a life. And you might have noticed that actually quite a lot of our suffering and stress happens in relationships. I don't know if you've noticed that. I certainly have. And even when we're sitting in a solitary practice, we might be going over conversations that we've had or relational problems. Maybe you even just noticed it now in your practice that you were thinking about people, you were thinking about situations with people. So, how might our practice, our personal practice, which is really vital and full of potential, how might that extend beyond that time alone on a cushion to our relational lives? How might we extend that? And how might our relationships become part of our path, become part of our exploration and living Dharma, basically? How might that happen? So this was a question that initiated the development of this practice, Insight Dialogue. And it's interesting, isn't it? I don't know about you, but often when I in the path of my practice, I looked at these sort of Buddha rupas, these statues of the Buddha. And he really does look like he's doing it all by himself. That it's up to him, that he's the one that's going to kind of work it out, and so should I, all by myself, and that kind of fits in many ways as kind of the Western kind of emphasis on individualism. That it's up to you, that you've got to sort it out. But one of the stories in of the Buddha's life really inspires me. Maybe you know it, when he was sitting under the Bodhi tree, absolutely determined that he was going to get to the root of suffering. And he's practiced all these ascetic practices. I don't know, maybe you've seen those pictures of him, and he's really, really skinny. He's almost on the verge of death. And then this young woman comes, her name's Sujata, and she offers him milk rice. And he takes the milk rice, and the milk rice starts to give him energy, which then he can, which then allows him to continue to practice and to attain realization. But without that gift, without that generosity and support of another, it wouldn't have happened. He was struggling, and it was like dying, and this person came along. And maybe you too, at difficult times in your life, have felt the kind of, the lifeline of community, of significant people that have helped you through difficulties. I know I certainly have, you know. And, you know, the Dharma is an oral tradition. It's kind of sort of invisible in a way. There are all these teachings, you know, that we're offered, these amazing teachings. And actually, they were offered in relationship. It was the Buddha or his disciples talking to people and people listening. And Sangha Live is part of that tradition, people talking and listening to this very day. And there are references in the suttas to the importance of spending time. Someone's written, I'm always let down by people. That's also the case. You know, people can be disappointing. Of course they can. And if we can integrate this as part of our practice, perhaps we can learn from it. I've been disappointed by people. I imagine most of us have. But hopefully we can learn from that. So yeah, so there are references in the sutta to the importance of friendship. Maybe you know them. But one of my favorites is when the Buddha's talking about friendship as like the sunrise. And I'd just like to read that. So it's from the Kalyanamita Sutta, and he says, mendicants, basically monastics, but us too, practitioners, the dawn is the forerunner and precursor of the sunrise. In the same way, good friendship is the forerunner and precursor of the Noble Eightfold Path for a mendicant. A mendicant with good friends can expect to develop and cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. So the Noble Eightfold Path to freedom, right? So that friendship is like the sunrise. And really, you know, I imagine, I don't think this was kind of just a kind of metaphor that arose. I imagine the Buddha just sitting one day, looking at the sunrise and reflecting on all those people around him that he was talking to about the Dharma, and seeing how these conversations and these interactions were actually enlivening the Dharma, supporting the development of insight and understanding. And so this practice of insight dialogue was developed by someone called Gregory Kramer. Maybe some of you know him. And basically, it's offered in a retreat context, but also in the form of online workshops. And what happens is we join together, usually in pairs, but sometimes in small groups. And we have these guidelines, these six guidelines that we practiced in the meditation. And we have a separate speaker and a separate listener. And the speaker will speak about a topic that's derived from the suttas. So we're actually contemplating the Dharma as we find it in our lived experience. So it's not something that's theoretical. It's something that we contemplate in the light of our lived experience, which was actually encouraged by the Buddha. Often he said, see for yourself, right? And what I love about this, and why I actually became so passionate about the practice is firstly, it allowed me to access these capacities through the guidelines. Mind, pause, relax, open, attune to emergence, listen deeply, speak the truth. But it also allowed me, with my partner, to start to investigate the teachings and for them to become enlivened. So I'm no longer reliant on a teacher who's the wise one. And let's face it, often the teachers are wise, but so are you. And so this practice is really a democratization. That's how I see it. Where we enter, it's like back in the day, you know, when the Bible was a book that only priests could read. But then at a certain point, it was distributed to the people. And for me, Insight Dialogue is a practice that really allows the teachings to move into a shared exploration, a shared recognition of your wisdom, my wisdom, our wisdom. And you know, it's really important that our practice move off our cushion, out of the Dharma halls and into our lives. Not just for us, but for our world. Our times need a practice that can engage with the world. We could describe many of the challenges that we're facing as either a breakdown in relationship or a failure of relationship. Whether it's the polarization that we're experiencing in our societies, whether it's the breakdown of relationship with our life support system, this planet, you know, we've forgotten, many of us have forgotten. This is life support. It's like it's not optional. We're totally reliant on this atmosphere and on this planet for everything. And we exist in webs of interdependence. No man is an island, somebody said. No person is an island would be a better way of putting it. So the teacher, Alan Watts, said this wonderful thing. He said, you are not born into this world. You are born out of it. You're born out of it. You know, the very fabric of our biology is of this earth and sustained by this earth. So, you know, as we sit here now, breathing in, you might notice as you breathe in, the breath is happening and we're being enlivened by the oxygen in the atmosphere. We're in continual relationship with this planet. And the out-breath moves back in to the air. We're in this, we're part of the ecology, we're participating in the whole thing. And so how can we consciously cultivate an awareness of our interrelatedness with other people, with the more than human world, and with the planet itself? And so this is a kind of practice for our times. So yeah, that's my wish really, is that that the power, the presence, that's cultivated in a personal sitting practice, that those qualities can move into the world and serve the world. And often, you know, there's a story in Western cultures. You see it in the movies, you know, of this sort of heroic individual. Again, there's this emphasis on the individual, you know, that's going to save the world. You see it in the Hollywood movies, right? But what if it's a lot more humble than that? What if it's, you know, just being the best that we can be in service of life, and that can be enough? And that how we relate and the attention that we give to relating can be part of it. I just want to leave you with another little story. And it's from the Jakarta Tales, which is a set of tales about the Buddha's life. And there's this forest fire. And I'm sure you're aware that we've been experiencing more and more of those on this planet. And there's this little bird, and they, you should see my bias there, they are flying to the ocean and collecting water in their beak, and then they're flying back and they're dropping the water back onto the fire, and they're doing this repeatedly. And then some animal in the forest says, "Come on, like what is that gonna do?" And the little bird says, "I don't know what it's gonna do, but I know it needs to be done. And so that's why I'm doing it." And I only knew the story until that point, and I told it at retreat, and one of the retreatants says there's more to the story. So I said, "Oh, you know, please tell me." And apparently the rain god was watching. And out of compassion, started to rain. And so, you know, when we take these actions in service of the web of life, of our relationality, we don't know what's going to happen. We really don't. And I'll just say one more last thing. Think of someone like Greta Thunberg, the schoolgirl. She just decides to sit down with a sign. Such a small thing, but we really don't know what we do does. So, I'd really like to have a conversation. So I'd like to invite you to really enter into a shared reflection, perhaps around the practice that you experienced, that I guided. How was that for you? Might be something to do with the teaching that I just shared. Or it might be something related to your personal practice, but feel really welcome to bring your voice in, and we can have a conversation. Yeah, thank you for your attention. A lovely little sparkly love heart floating up the screen. Someone's feeling loving. A couple of people are feeling loving. Look, wow. It's good to feel the love. Yeah, we've got fireworks of love hearts. Really lovely. Thank you from Nancy. Thanks, Nancy. just reading a message. Oh, there's a few messages. So someone's talking about, I'll answer this and then I'll see if someone else wants to bring their voice in. So some are saying that online it can feel really disappointing when people don't respond. Yeah, I really get that. It can be, or even when not getting the disappointment of not getting a conversation with a friend. Yeah, as I said, you know, a lot of our suffering happens relationally. And so that disappointment, I think is perfectly natural, you know, when we care about someone and then, you know, that we don't get the response that we might wish for. And there may be treasure in the disappointment itself, if you can kind of get curious about that. So to really to notice if that's a pattern in relationship. I know it has been for me at times. And also to really, if it feels possible for you, to take it into your practice and really sit with it. How is it to experience disappointment? What's the experience of that like? In compassion. So what you're not getting from the friend, maybe you can offer yourself in terms of presence, attention, kindness and compassion. So yes, yeah, so anybody want to bring their voice in?
Oh,
then I'll go
hi.
Back to the chat. Hey Ellen.
Are you there? Oh yes, I loved your meditation, and I have to be honest, I give them to myself every day. I record them and delete them. It's the most best thing I do for myself. I'm even in a meditation group daily. It's through Eckhart Tolle, a long story, but I don't show up for the meditation. I just show up for the silence afterwards. because the meditations aren't for me are too like conceptual, but yours was so spacious. I want to thank you. And I happen to love Alan Watts and follow him. You know, I'm at a point which is a little bit different. You know, I feel like I only have, and I've kind of found it, the freedom within. So it kind of doesn't matter what someone else does, because it's important is my reaction to it. And working with that and really doing a lot of transcendence for me, because for me, there's like no truth. You know, it's like how I react to something someone says is going to be quite different than some, you know, someone else's reaction. So my focus really has been on really standing alone in freedom and not reliance really on anything outside myself. It sounds funny because we are interdependent. So, but I feel that the only work I can do is on myself. And it sounds funny, but I read it, you know, this morning. I happen to agree with Nisargadatta. We only have to find that inner peace. There isn't really although I am an environmentalist and animal rights person, but there's less need to kind of do for me, more to just focus on myself and inner peace. I don't know. I feel like that is a vibration energy that, you know, nothing compares, and I feel like that really is all that's needed. That when I'm peaceful,
yeah,
I'll take right actions. You know, right actions come from peace and that inner stillness.
Yeah.
So that's been the only focus for like several years now, and it's really been so worth it. But your meditation, I had to laugh because I don't know you. I just by chance joined 5 minutes. I saw it in my email. I thought, oh, let me try. I'm so glad you give the most. It's so spacious, and there's so much. Just quietude, space, and that for me makes the difference for me to be able to so thank you
and finding
so much.
Finding that spaciousness in your own experience, you know, because for someone else that space might feel like really busy, you know, but for you that there's that you could find that internal space. And actually, you know what strikes me, Ellen, is that, like, you know, when we're able to access, because it can be very sustaining, very resourcing, then there's more availability for other people, for animals, for life, you know. So they're both important, aren't they?
Yeah, but I do feel the inner peace. I just always act. I mean, versus I used to be such a, especially with what's going on in the United States, with Trump, but I show up with a quiet sign. I go to a No Kings rally, but I no longer have to yell, scream. I can't explain. It's a very different way of showing up. So it's important to me at this stage in the United States, the dark ages here, but to wear it lighter and just keep on focusing on the inner stillness, the inner peace. And I do notice that I just automatically will help someone who's homeless. I automatically will give someone money or food. You know what I mean? It's from that inner peace. So that's why these days, no matter what someone says to me, it doesn't really matter. It's my reaction. If I get triggered, then I just need to look at that and give it space. And usually I can let it pass. So yeah, it's been wonderful.
Thank you so much for bringing that forward. And you're sharing points to what I've been saying. There's so much wisdom that we can, through dialogue, we can share with each other, because there was a question about disappointment, and now you're saying that. So it's really helpful. Thank you so much, and thank you for your good work and activism also. Thank you. Thanks. Okay, I can see Jonathan. Oh, I think there's two people with their hands up. I just wanted to come back to the chat for a second. Yeah, so someone's just acknowledging that relational practice can be really, really supportive. And actually, it's very helpful. It's more helpful for them than meditating alone. So we're all so different, aren't we? And may need different ways of practicing. So I think Nina was next. Hey, Nina.
Hi, can you
Hiya.
turn around because you can't see my face because the light's actually behind
Oh, there
me.
we go. I can see you now.
So I just had I had a question about the insight dialogue, the meditation, and it was pause, relax, allow, and then what was the one after that? Attune to emergence. I've
There's
jotted it.
open
Open.
in between, because
So
basically,
pause,
pause,
relax,
relax, open, attune to
open,
emergence.
attune to emergence. Okay. And what do you mean, attune to emergence?
Well, can I just go back to open for a
Yeah,
second?
of course, yeah.
Because we've got pause. This is establishing mindfulness. So there's, awareness of the body, like as we're relating, I'm imagining that you're aware of you, you're aware of what you're thinking, you're aware of what you're feeling, you're also aware of me. And so we have this capacity to open internally, externally. Often what can happen is when we're in relationship with others, through habit, through social conditioning, we'll go all into the other, we'll forget anything that's going on inside us, or we withdraw into ourselves. So this practice of opening is consciously establishing that kind of relational bridge. And then, like, if you just notice now, everything's just come happening. Like, you can't predict what I'm going to say, or even what you're going to think. What sounds are going to happen in the environment, what's going to happen on the screen. So the reality of our experience is it's in constant flux and change, and that we can attune to it, to that. And that, in terms of our solitary practice, that can be quite beautiful in terms of just allowing the flow. So in the guidance, I said, whatever is in your practice is your practice. That's the reality. How could it be otherwise, right? And then relationally, attuned to emergence becomes important, because often when we're in relationship, particularly if there's any relational anxiety, we can start to speak from habit. from things we know, well kind well-worn ways of communicating. So attuned to emergence means that we're both here, established in mindfulness, aware of each other, and we're listening for what next. It's really exciting, it's fresh. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. It makes a lot of sense. And I kind of like the, I'm just thinking how to explain. It really opens things up because, like tunnel vision, is a thing, isn't it? And I noticed when we were doing the meditation, when you asked to sort of feel the air on the right hand and then think about the space to the right, the space to the left. Actually, often when I'm in meditation, I'm very much in my own internal space and I'm not really connecting with what is outside of myself as well. So although I'm not chasing thoughts and I do often reach a point of spaciousness, it's a spaciousness within that isn't connected to the spaciousness without. And what happened for me in that meditation was that I connected the two together. And that really then made me think about connectedness to others and to everybody else, which actually is kind of where my practice started because I've come from a Tibetan Buddhist background where meditation is for the benefit of all beings, and not just for. I've had to sort of shift it back and sort of focus on my own practice because I have to start there to be able to grasp the things I need to grasp. But it's nice that I've kind of it's connected some dots for me in a really beautiful way. So
I'm really
yeah,
glad to
thank
hear
you.
that. When we're ready, then we can kind of widen to include others and the wider world. I'm really glad to hear that. Thanks for
Yeah, this is
speaking.
the sort of facet to be able to kind of connect with that, and extend my practice. It's kind of given me that missing link, if you like. Oh, that's been
Yeah,
really
I'm really
beautiful.
glad.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nina.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll just check the chat and then I'll come back to Jonathan. I can't see the order. Okay. Okay. Can you tell us how to get involved in the workshops you mentioned led by Gregory Kramer? There's a website, it's called Insight Dialogue, and you can just go on there and there's a global community with workshops and events that you can participate in. And someone else felt that I was being too political. I acknowledge your point of view. Thank you for sharing. And oh, not me. Oh, okay. Someone said not me. But anyway, I do I don't know if any of you are familiar with the scholar monk Bhikkhu Bodhi. He's very interesting and he's been writing a lot about the necessity of our practice meeting the times that we're in, and that may indeed include the political. And we all, as I said, we're all very different, and for some of us that might not feel possible, but for others our spiritual practice includes the societies, the worlds that we're in, and that might feel important to some of us. So, live and let live, as it were. There's no pressure on you, whoever that was, to do anything other than feels appropriate to you. Jonathan?
Hi, first of all, thanks for the
Hi.
beautiful meditation. I think my question ties into the two big questions from the chat about difficulties making contact, and also this last remark about the political. What I notice is communication can get difficult if the other person is discomforted by certain thoughts or certain beliefs, as in this case, the political specifics. How can you still engage if the political or some other topic which is important to me,
Getting some feedback here.
yeah, is this better?
No, it's still there. It's like a
Okay.
high-pitched whistle. Have you finished your question?
I'm turning it completely down. It should be gone right now,
Yeah,
but
how
I
strange.
cannot
Is
hear
anybody
anything.
else? Oh, I think Nina, you're still unmuted. Maybe that will help. It's still there. How strange. Why? Oh, and you're muted. So it's gone now. So, oh no, it's back.
Maybe it's you. I don't know.
I
Maybe it's
don't think
something.
so. It wasn't happening before.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it, how that happens on Zoom? It's like we try to find out who it is. I
Yeah.
don't know where it's coming from. It's just happening.
Okay.
I'm going to mute.
Now it's gone.
Sorry to let you know, Rosalie, but it's on your end.
Is it? How do you
So,
know? Nothing's changed here.
can you just try to lower your sound and see what happens? Okay.
It seems to have
Yeah,
stopped. How
it stopped.
strange.
Good now.
Okay, let's go back to
Yeah.
Jonathan. Thank you.
How to
Thanks,
deal
George.
with the uncomfortable topics?
Yes.
I have a feeling, like personally, that people tend to either disengage or get to like everyday topics and try to work around the uncomfortable stuff.
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
Any
sometimes
ideas about?
when I'm teaching this, I describe it as the PhD of practice. You know, because it's challenging. It can be challenging being in relationship with other people, right? But that doesn't need to be an indication that we need to switch off from that. And that's why this practice is so full of potential, because actually, if we can pause, when we pause, so say for example, we're in a difficult communication, I'm going to be noticing a lot of stress responses more than likely, right? Hormones are going to be rushing around my body, there's going to be tension, my mind might start speeding up. So establishing pause, being mindful of what's happening is a first point, grounding. And then this second guideline, this is one of the beauties of this guideline, is that we can consciously relax. So consciously softening muscles, being willing to receive the discomfort.
I get it, but that's about our own discomfort.
Yes.
But the thing I'm struggling with more is the discomfort of the other person.
Yes. Well, what can you do about that?
Because, yeah, so for myself, I can practice
Yeah, but what
and
can you do
learning
about the
to,
discomfort
yeah,
of the other
learning to
person?
process the discomfort and everything. But I cannot simply say to the other person, hey, you get to practice more.
No, you can't. But what you can do through practice is reduce the likelihood of a negative feedback loop
Yeah.
where you're both reacting, you know, and then it becomes more and more explosive. Don't get me wrong, It's still going to happen even if you do this practice, because we're not that much in control. But actually having a practice like this makes it less likely that you'll get into that loop. And there's a story in the Dhammapada that I really love. I don't know if I'm getting it completely accurate, but it says it's on anger. And it says, be like a broken gong. Be still. And I don't know if you know, but if you break a gong, it just doesn't make any sound whatsoever. It doesn't resonate. And so you and I right now, we're in a resonant relationship. You're feeling me, you're thinking about me, I'm imagining, like you're sensing how this is going, so am I. And so if there's this experience where we're having difficulty, and then I suddenly, there's some sort of calming happening in me, you're going to notice that, or maybe not. We don't know. But actually, that's a gift that we can offer in that situation. Grounding and finding some way to hold our own reactivity. How does that sound?
Yeah, it's I agree with, and I felt it in this way also in like difficult conversations, but it doesn't always work out.
No, that's the thing, like. There's not a once and all fix. I mean,
Yeah.
maybe you've experienced that with your practice. I certainly have. At the
Yeah.
beginning, there was this idea that was going to solve all my problems, and it doesn't. It improves things a lot. It's the same with relational practice. So come and try Insight Dialogue.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Lovely to meet you. Thanks. Oh, we're almost at time now. I'm really sorry. So I'm not going to get to talk to Niels and Charles. I'm really sorry about that. Yeah.
I mean,
George?
it's your call, Rosie. I mean, if
We could
people
go over a
are,
few
we could go
minutes.
for a few minutes if you want to.
Yes. Okay,
If
let's
you're
do that. Let's do that. Yeah, so someone's put in the chat just to follow on from that conversation that we just had, co-regulation. That's a lovely, sweet way to capture what we were just talking about. Okay, Niels, and then Charles, and then we'll close.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Niels.
Hello. Thank you for the talk and the meditation. Greetings from Belgium, by the way.
Thank you.
I think I'm quite relatively new to all the teachings, the practices, meditation, etc. I'm really studying it as much as I can. I've really become quite passionate about it. Also, the practice really try to incorporate it daily. I think one of the main challenges, or one of the big challenges, I still also sense now is what you also referred to at the end, and I also happened to hear Jon Kabat-Zinn say it earlier in something I saw on YouTube, is how to take the practice and what actually, according also to Jon Kabat-Zinn, the real practice is in the daily life, so in taking it to life and not just on the cushion or which is also an important part, but and I think to make that bridge to make that to take it with you when you step out and when you interact, everything takes so much, our attention gets so challenged all the time by everything we need to focus on and do and react. And so I was just wondering how, if you have maybe anything you could share on how you maybe things that you do, maybe, for example, to kind of every now and then make sure that you kind of keep some of the insights flowing while you're also really in the midst of all life.
And you've already mentioned a few, like listening to inspiring talks, reading inspiring books, practicing, which you've just told me that you're doing. But also, I don't know if you've come across routine activities that you can. I like to practice when I'm washing up. I like to practice when I'm walking. So there's certain, like I have a no phone rule when I'm walking. So I don't look at my phone when I'm walking. It's a beautiful practice,
Yeah, but these are still very well, relatively easy, so to speak, because
Yes.
you're on your own.
You
You
want hard practices.
it's it it's like more when you get really challenged in the midst of all the of being in company, being
Do
in
you mean
as
relational, yeah?
yeah, and just doing things that you're doing and needing to respond to things
Yeah.
more like that, but
Yeah, well, I mean, basically a pause can be very helpful. So really checking in, taking a moment to sense what's here for me as I notice that I'm getting kind of activated. But one of the things that I didn't say, or I don't feel that I emphasized, is that actually relational practice is really helps to amplify the meditative qualities. And we can, through practicing with another person, we start to notice our relational habits in a safe place with the support of the guidelines. So obviously, I'm recommending that you come and try out Insight Dialogue. Come and try it.
All right.
Yeah?
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Niels.
Well, thank
Hey, Charles.
you.
And then
Sorry.
we'll finish. Go on, Nina.
Just wanted to ask, how can we how to phrase it, get more of you? Do you do meditations? Do you do workshops and things? Do we have your details on the chat as well?
I've put the link from Rosie's website on the chat. If you go a little, I can put it back at the end.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you.
And you can go to the Insight Dialogue website as well. It'd be lovely to see you again, Nina.
Which is also already in the chat.
Yeah, thanks,
Yeah, I saw
George.
that one, and just that, and there'll be a replay so we can experience that lovely meditation all over again.
Yes, good. I'm glad. Charles, and then we'll close. Oh, you're muted, Charles.
There you go. Thank you so much for your generosity and being here and a very, very nice hour. My comment will be very brief, but I've made this many times in sanghas where this has occurred. And I agree that all of us are upset at the world situation with the political situation. It's irrelevant to me what your views are. It doesn't matter. It's upsetting, it's disturbing. But when people say in the sangha, "Oh, I'm very upset and disturbed by that," the question is, well, how do I deal with that generally? But when then they start throwing in why, because this political so-and-so is doing this and what they're doing, and it doesn't matter which side you're on, irrelevant. It's, in my respectful feeling, is all that does is sow the seeds of discord, because there's always going to be somebody else with the opposite beliefs in, present, almost always. May not be in the majority of the beliefs of the people present, but it'll be upsetting to someone. And that's not what the sangha is all about. It's about cultivating serenity and calmness and peaceful, not having a political discussion. If this was a political a meeting, okay, let's duke it out. Doesn't matter what your views are, but we're not here for that. And that's all I was trying to say.
And you know what, Charles, what you were saying is very welcome. And I think that, how do we allow the world to be part of the practice? As far as I know, maybe there are monastics online, I don't know, but for most of us, we're living in the world. And can our practice include the realities of our lives? And
Yes.
not just as a great idea, but as a necessity. When we see what's happening environmentally, when we see what's happening to our cultures, when we see what's happening to people in our communities, surely our practice can meet that. And so, while I agree with you that it's not necessarily a place to stand on a soapbox and give your political perspectives, actually the integration of what we call politics into our practice, I think, is a very needed one. And just to say, not all of us, that's not the case for all of us. So, and that needs to be respected. So,
So it would be appropriate for me, if this were my state of mind, I'm not saying it is or it isn't, for to be very supportive about the present administration. So, I find great relief that what's going on in government today is really helping, and boy, that really helps me. Would that be appropriate? I don't think so, but what do you think it would be?
Well, we're not having discussions about that, are we?
Well, the name Trump was mentioned. I'm very disturbed
Yes,
by
it
Trump and
was.
what they're doing. The name that young
Yes.
lady who said, you cited her as sitting about the environmentals. Fine, it may be one,
Yes.
but that's it's all political.
And, as we sit together, you and I, having this conversation, I wonder what you're noticing in your experience. I know what I'm noticing in my experience.
I'm noticing that I think, in my respect for my personal feeling, is politics should stay out of spiritual sanghas.
Yes, and you're very welcome to have that perspective.
Okay.
And what does it do to you? We don't have
It
to.
dis what it does is it disappoints me because I feel that people are compelled to state their and to try to impose their personal opinions on others in something that's supposed to be a neutral sangha.
Well, I think we need to come to a close now, but
Okay.
I'm not sure that neutral exists. And again, as we're talking, if I establish mindfulness, if I pause, I'm noticing a lot of movement in my body in response to this dialogue, right? And I wonder if you can notice too. Because obviously, for you, someone speaking about a politician feels triggering in some way. It feels like an imposition. And
That's
that
why
is
it should not be
interesting.
stated here. That is why it should not be
Well,
stated here, because
yes,
it does that. That's the effect of it. And
it
that's not what
does,
we're here
but
for.
that's life. I mean, people are doing that every day.
Okay.
How do we practice with that?
Well, then
Anyway,
all.
I